Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a friend of the show, someone I'm looking forward to speaking with because we haven't caught up for quite a while, but she's on the front line with her ear to the ground and the kind of the town crier in the sense that she's telling everybody what's going on, because if you don't really follow our education system, it's moving in directions that I don't think parents know, and the children are really on the front line being exposed to everything. So I want to welcome Miss Lynn Taylor back, the Common Core Diva, and we're going to discuss new things that are coming down the pipe. So Lynn, I want to thank you so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Dr. Elena, and hello to your audience once again. It's been a while since we've been together, but you know, that's okay, because like-minded people need to be together as often as possible, because we do have so much going on around us, and I want folks to understand that the two-party election is merely a demise it's a way to divert us from what is really, really going on as far as our education system and what is happening to our children.
I think that's very good, a very good place to start, because I think our emotions are driving pretty much everything, whether it's things that our children are being exposed to, we're being exposed to. Every time you turn on the TV, there's something that is making the rational brain turn off, and emotions are just running, I think, wild. So let's get into it. What's the new charter that's out there, the Summit of the Future meeting at the UN? Because I know they're meeting currently.
Right. They just wrapped up that meeting, Dr. Elena. And what it did was it got the member states, which, of course, we know the United States is one of those member states of the United Nations, to come together and say, hey, we really think that we need a United Nations 2.0, so to speak. So we're going to have this brand new charter. We're going to give the UN more power over the member states, and the member states are going to weaken their governing bodies in the process, is the part that's not been brought up. But part of what the charter or the summit was about was this charter to strengthen the United Nations. But lock, stock, and barrel that came with that were all those sustainable development goals. And as we have discussed many, many times on your show together, that reaches every aspect of our lives, from education to health care to where we live, how we live, what we eat, the air we breathe, the water that we drink, everything. And so artificial intelligence has been woven into every one of those sustainable development goals, especially the data tracking to track us from birth to death. And what we're seeing happen here is that we're having our government come up with more and more ways to say, we're not tracking our citizens enough, so we need to come up with new ways to do it. And all this data doesn't stay in the United States. It doesn't stay local to your school. It doesn't stay in your state. It goes all over the internet. It goes all over where artificial intelligence goes, especially to the United Nations and the World Bank, the World Economic Forum, you name it. If they're a partner of the United Nations, this data will end there.
How are they getting this data? I mean, I know that everything's pretty much electronic, and learning has all been placed online. And even we discussed before, homeschool children may not be immune from this because it's like a catchment. But are they just scraping the data from the lesson plans and what kids are putting, or is it school-based, or is it everything that the child does on the internet, whether it's social as well?
It's pretty much everything, Dr. Elena, and not just for our children, for ourselves as well. And what we're finding out is that, okay, if it's data mining that's coming through education, that's 9 times out of 10 going to be through those assessments. That's how they can get you, whether you're in public, private, or homeschool schools. If it's through your healthcare system, well, of course, we know that that's going to be through your doctor, your hospital, your urgent care. This is coming through housing as well. And this is one of the latest grabs is that we're seeing from housing and urban development in partnership with not just the Department of Education, but the Department of Labor, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Energy. Pretty much all the unconstitutional federal agencies that we have come up with these ways to data mine. And the way they're getting by with this is from congressional mandates. Now, let's stop and review, first of all, how our government works. The government is supposed to work in the way that we have an executive branch that oversees everything. We also have a judicial branch, and we have a legislative branch. Well, Congress hangs out in the legislative branch, okay? They're supposed to make laws. They're not supposed to create mandates. Neither is the executive branch. Neither is the judicial branch. We've seen mandates come out in executive orders from the executive part of the administration. This is where our presidents, regardless of Republican or Democrat, misuse those executive orders to create initiatives and programs that are supposed to be coming out of the legislative body. And so now we have the legislative body coming in and going, well, we're not going to mess with laws. We're going to come up with these mandates. And we're going to hide them in legislation, and then we're going to take bukus of taxpayer money, and we're going to create study groups to come in and say, here's the justification for why you should have this mandate, and then put it in the bill, and then pass it as law, and then pretend everything's hunky-dory, because after all, they didn't bend the law.
I have a question. A mandate and a law, they're not the same thing. You know, one is you shall. And one is, you know, not as strong. I mean, a law is, you have to follow it, but a mandate is just an order, but it's not law, is it?
No, it's not. But here again, we have educrats who will take regular words and use them to confuse us on purpose. For example, when you hear policy, go take a poll and find out how many people believe that that policy is law. Policies are not law. We've discussed this, I don't know how many times on this show, but we're going to go over this example one more time. The law is concrete. That's the sidewalk you're walking on. The policies are going to be the leaves that fall on that sidewalk as you walk along. And as you know, we have different trees that are planted alongside the road. So we might take one step and we'll see a pecan leaf. We might take another step, we'll see an oak leaf. Well, that pecan leaf represents some think tank's policy that is affecting the law that you're using as the sidewalk. With the oak, it's going to be another think tank group that's coming in, and that's their interpretation of the law that you're using as a sidewalk. Mm-hmm. Mandates are what we see that happen in totalitarian regimes. Laws are what we see that are supposed to be made in republics.
So from the standpoint of the longevity of these things, if they're executive order and they're mandates, potentially, I'm not saying it can happen, but theoretically, a new administration coming in can wipe it clean. Is that not true?
Nope.
No?
Nope. Once that executive order is put out by the president to, in effect, make a national initiative, executive order is never rescinded. So we have executive orders left over from previous administrations, Dr. Elena, that are still being enforced. Now, that doesn't stop the new administration from coming in and making ones that would somehow lessen the previous administrations, or it might just totally wipe it out. Mm-hmm. For example, we've got, we know that George Bush the second was really big on making executive orders where it had to do with faith-based organizations partnering with neighborhoods. Well, somewhere along the line, either that one was weakened or wiped out altogether by another one that probably replaced it. But now we have one under the Biden administration that did the same stupid thing. So it's showing us that regardless of Republican or Democrat, the agenda is not going to be any different. That's why I said at the top of the show that the two-party election is really a demise for us, but it's also a delusion, because we have so many people thinking, oh, well, you know, we've got to get rid of those mean, nasty Democrats and put in those conservative Republicans. Well, if you look at some of what the Republicans are backing, as well as the Democrats, you're going to see they're going to talk different in front of you, but behind the scenes, it's bicameral, bipartisan legislation or mandates or executive orders.
I mean, the question has to be asked, what's in it for them? I mean, we are, as all countries in the world should be, sovereign. Why are they ceding their power? They're literally not creating laws that help us. It's all about folding yourself into a whole, you know, a common entity, right? So why do you even want to be a legislator if you don't have any wherewithal to protect your citizens and to give them and make them as whole and help them, you know, pursue what the Constitution, Bill of Rights, and everything says, you know, the pursuit of happiness and to be free? How does that change? What do you think? I know it's a big question, but how do you think we got into this situation?
We sold out. We sold out to become a member state. And with member state itis comes compliance. So, you know, let's think back to the thing of, you know, the United States was there at the Summit of the Future. They willingly signed on to this. And that is a big, big warning, because that's showing you that while the UN is gaining power, America and all the other member states that signed this are weakening their governing power. Does this mean anything to us? It should. It should mean everything. It means that we're losing the last vestiges of our republic to be turned into a UN-recognized democracy, which we're not a democracy already. So, you know, look at all the mainstream media sites that are going, vote 2024, it's time for America's democracy. Yeah. Well, boo hiss, no. In the Constitution, in the Declaration of Independence, it never said we're creating a democracy. It said we are creating a republic. Totally different ways of government, okay? Mm-hmm. So this is... The short and simple answer is that America has sold itself out. The legislators have sold themselves out. They no longer do the will of the people or the people who put them in office. They do what the lobbyists and the corporate people tell them to do. They don't even write their own legislation anymore. They have some lobbyists do it, or some corporation do it, or some legalese bureaucrat that will do it. They'll stick their name on it. And then go, oh, look at me. Look how great I am. I'm saving America, or I'm saving the planet, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. On that note, let's take our first break, because I think you've given us a really good foundation on the stakes that we're dealing with and how this can irreversibly change how we function as Americans and as world citizens, basically, versus being sovereign and loving your country. So on that note, let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Miss Lynn Taylor, the Common Core Diva. And before the break, you were giving us a great look, overview of the balance of power switching, or like a pendulum swinging towards this unelected body that will affect everything about our society and other countries' society. And my take on it, it's always the lowest common denominator. It's not like we're all going to be free to pursue our gifts and talents. You know, we're going to have to meld ourselves into a whole. And we're seeing the beginning of this, aren't we, with people being picked up for speaking the truth when going against the narrative. It's happening. It seems like a lot of countries are adopting this.
Right. And it won't be long before we're in that same boat. So even our broadcast would put us in danger of being arrested for speaking the truth. That is a total violation of not just a protected right of freedom of speech, but the God-given right to freely express yourself. So we have that in mind as well, that is on the chopping block, so to speak. But this data mining, I want folks to really understand this is something that is should be so scary, because we've talked about it before, where it's going to put not only your children, but yourself as worth more as a artificial intelligent avatar than it is a living, breathing person. That should be very, very scary. And when you look at some of the new things that are coming out, we have the National Academies of Science, Education, and Medicine that are involved. And what they've done is they've come up with this, oh, we have to help Congress satisfy the mandate for having intergenerational poverty broken. And the way we're going to do it is we're going to go in and we're going to create housing. And we're going to have housing that takes data, and it will use education data so that Johnny and Susie can know that the public housing that they're going to be put in, they will have the best opportunity to have the best education, because after all, their outcome is our business. Now, Dr. Elena, while I'm not picking on any one group, I wanted to point out the reason why I dramatized that was because anytime the government uses the word outcome in the same breath as your children, you should be screaming. Because what that means is that the government has predetermined Johnny and Susie's future through the assessments that pigeonhole them to the job of where they will be trained for. And it will also pigeonhole them as into the place they will live in now, the housing they will have. But now, I did say public housing, and some people are going to say, well, wait a minute, that doesn't have anything to do with me. I own my own home. When you look at the natural disasters that are just going on and how many people are losing their homes due to whatever, we saw this happen in COVID. People were priced out of their homes. Mm-hmm. Big companies came in, bought up all the homes, then turned around and said, oh, well, you know what? You used to own this home, but now you rent it and you're going to pay me X number of dollars more. That's part of the sustainable development goal number one that gives us the supposed no poverty. It doesn't mean there's not going to be any poverty at all. What it means is that everybody's going to be in the same boat. You won't own your own home. It will be some form of public housing. And if it's not public housing, it will be someone who controls the rent for you.
So it's an example of my statement that it's going to the lowest common denominator. And
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you talked about natural disasters, but there's a segue with that, with people who need to have, in order to carry a mortgage, you have to insure your home. So the insurance rates are going up tremendously in these areas, and people getting removed from their house because they can't afford to pay the insurance rate. And I can imagine how that's going to continue to skyrocket.
Oh, it absolutely will. And, you know, this begs the question, go start looking up. It's starting to surface that people are discovering the patents that have been handed out down through the years for weather manipulation. So is it really a natural disaster or is it a man-made one? Well, if insurance is written just so, it may not cover what happened to you.
I mean, they're a business, aren't they? So if they go bankrupt paying out, then it doesn't bode well for anybody. And, you know, this is, again, everything, it's like a cookie cutter. The same thing could be happening in the healthcare space, where people are accessing their health insurance with bigger ticket items, cancer and catastrophic illness. At some point, they're going to stop covering things too because they can't afford to pay for everything. So we're seeing
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying you can see this like a tidal wave of you pay into a system, Social Security, you name it, and it's all being used in such a way that it's not going to, may not be there for you when you actually need it.
Absolutely. I just, Yeah, and the thing that gets me is this National Academies of Science Education and Medicine. They are supposedly a nonprofit organization. But here's the kicker. They're funded, the majority of their funding comes through Congress through these studies that they're commissioned for to back up these federal mandates. Now, there is a 2024 Congressional Justifications PDF out there. It is over 400 pages, and buried on page 282, Dr. Elena, you can find the verbiage that will tell you that, Congress needs this study to have compliance with mandates in delivering equitable, excellent, and secure federal services and customer experiences. Well, who's the customer? We are. No. We're not supposed to be a customer. We're a citizen. Now, why would the federal government use the word customer in regard to us as we the people? Because you have to go back and trace the history of the United States. When it was in the late 1800s, America ceased to be a free nation and was turned into a business corporation. I kid you not. Thus, we ceased being citizens and became customers for the government to serve or to manipulate.
Yeah, because they don't serve us.
Right, they don't. They absolutely don't. Now, don't lose that, because when you look at the goals for the Summit of the Future, I'm going to read these off to you. It creates an international consensus for a better future for all, especially in giving no regards for politics or economic landscapes. It will give a pact for the future that is an excuse to speed up the sustainable development goals. We've already talked about that, thereby increasing the United Nations power. We've talked about that. It will force global digitalization. And finally, the Declaration on Future Generations that was part of this summit and this pact that was just signed further cements the United Nations authority over every other member state.
That's tragic. I mean, if that happens, again, you have this nebulous, unelected fiefdom, really, that gets to pronounce it everything across the globe. I mean, just think about that. We're all different. We have different customs, different habits, different everything. And that's what makes the world awesome, because that's why you want to travel, so you can experience other cultures. How
Absolutely.
On earth can that possibly work? How can it work?
You know, it's not. And that's the horrible thing. And we're going to all be the test dummies that they try this out on. But I wanted you to know that, you know, the National Academy for Science, Education, and Medicine, gets their money from Congress. Well, where did Congress get their money from, Dr. Elena?
Us. From us.
We the people.
Yeah.
Taxpayer money. Now, the supposed nonprofit also gets its money from philanthropists, from corporations, and from any other entity that decides, oh yeah, we want to get in on this study for A, B, C, and D. Now, they cover so many different initiatives, but this one for the housing has had the backing of the National Association of Home Builders, because they're urging Congress quite heavily, and this was reported back in June of this year, to, hey, we got to do something about housing, man. There's not enough housing in America. Oh, really? There's plenty of housing, but we're sending land raped to put up rack and stack pack apartments. Well, why is that? Because nobody's going to have a house. We're not going to have that house. They are determined. We're all going to, because you have to do that to not only deal with the sustainable development goals, but to become part of that smart city. And we know that that is going to be hooked into the data as well. So yeah, this is such an Orwellian, just horrible, horrible setup for us. Now, Congress didn't stop with just having a study by a nonprofit that they fund on our dime. They also have currently in Congress, Senate Bill 2701, which is called Housing for All. It has a sister bill called H.R. 5254. Now, neither one of these has moved since mid-2023. However, the Senate one has 6 co-sponsors and the House has 22. So in the House, it's got more popularity. But now here's what we need to watch out for. With the recent amount of disasters where people have lost their homes, they've been washed away or whatever, and this bill is called Housing for All, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think this is going to gain traction? And remember, all 435 seats are on the table in November for us to vote in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can imagine it's going to be a race to the bottom. I can foresee people being moved to places that are less, quote, likely to have a disaster. So you can move whole populations out of regions or sections. That could happen. You can certainly, you know, consolidate your communities so that they're easy access. You don't have to have a lot of travel. You don't need cars, et cetera, saying that it'll be less damaging to the environment. Or, I mean, North Carolina, for example, has been hit and the infrastructure getting in and out is almost impossible. So if you congregate folks in one area that they can walk, you know, not have to worry about this in the future, it kind of lays the groundwork to achieve what they want to achieve, which is to load us up in as small a region and area as they can and have everything else just be open.
Right. Well, on that note, let me give you a fun little tidbit about this area of North Carolina. There is one area in the entire world that has the type of crystals that are needed to make computer chips. And it's within 30 miles of Asheville, going up towards the Blue Ridge Parkway. It just got wiped out. So what do you think is going to happen? Do you think people are going to sit here and notice that? No. Are they going to notice the fact that there's a huge lithium deposit in that same area? And lithium is used for not only smart cars, but our cell phones. Asheville has just been tagged to become one of the smart cities. I knew that years ago because of some of the education research I was doing. So I'm not surprised by that. Most of your major cities across the United States are on target for that, if not already. But when you have some place like that get hit and it supposedly wipes out those kinds of resources, it doesn't mean we're going to be scrambling and, oh, no, we can't have that computer chip anymore. Honey, they've already got all they need. It just means we won't be able to get what we need.
Man, that's tragic. I mean, that's something of for people to really think about. Slow down and think about it. And you've just wiped out wealth, if you can think about it that way as well, right? So we're seeing a transfer of wealth from the individual and family. And we're going to talk about intergenerational poverty in a second, because is this the groundwork for that? Because how do you give your house to your children if you don't have it? How do you have a job that you can produce wealth that you can actually save for the future? These guys are scrambling for life and death at most right at this point. So on that note, let's take our second break and think about that. And when we come back, let's tackle that question. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And, you know, you just made a sobering statement. And you know, this is bigger than just this disaster. It's about the future. And part of what we're talking about is intergenerational poverty. What is that, in your opinion?
It is an excuse for another way to have the government come in and say, oh, I'm here to help.
So it's not about the individual being empowered. It's about literally having to depend for everything, where you live, what you eat, where you work. I mean, that's going from being your own self-sufficient person and family and unit to being on the dole and at the, you know, the mercy, the largesse of the government. And I don't know about you, but I'm feeling that there's some vindictive stuff going on sometimes with the government And if you fall on the wrong side of what they want you to do, they'll take it out on you. So,
right. If not you, your children. But no, yeah. As far as the system goes, their definition of intergenerational poverty is the fact that, okay, you have a person, say you or I, and we grew up in poverty, and now we're moving out and we're in poverty. So what are we to do? Oh my goodness, we need help. We need help from the government. So here's what the government decided to do. The 2024 president's budget requests over $100 billion in mandatory funding over the next 10 years. Now, Dr. Elena, let's stop and think. We're not going to have the same administration, but this money is going to continue on. This is why it's so important to not just look at who's running, but look who's in office now. What is going to still carry over? What is not going to carry over? Okay. Now let me continue. So that's going to be $100 billion in mandatory funding for over the next 10 years for programs at housing and urban development, as well as tax credits to provide affordable housing. This is a new proposal for 2024 and will have the following components: $15 billion for extremely low income subsidies. Okay. What is subsidy? In government speak, it's a handout, okay? Of that $15 billion, $7.5 of it will go to new project-based rent-assisting contracts. Oh, yes, I'm going to go rent, and I'm going to get in a contract with the government. Anytime you sign a contract, it is an agreement between two parties. There is give and take. But when it's a government contract, it is government does all the taking, and you do all the giving. The other half of that will go to preserve distressed housing. Well, what the heck does that mean? There's no definition, okay? $10 billion more will go to grants that will reduce barriers for being able to even get a house. Well, what's a grant? It's a glorified loan. $22 billion for housing vouchers. What's a voucher? It's money that the government hands you and tells you, oh, yes, you could go do A, B, C, and D. But then, oh, wait a minute, we forgot there were strings. We didn't tell you about that. So, no, you can't go do A, B, and C, and D. We're seeing this voucher mess play out in education under the guise of school choice. That's how I can describe it that way. All right, of the $22 billion for housing vouchers, $9 billion of that, Dr. Elena, goes for youth aging out of foster care. And $13 billion will go for extremely low-income vets. Lastly, $10 billion for first-generation home buyer assistance.
Where's this money coming from?
Well, it's money that is absolutely worthless because we are the only government that I know that will have a treasury that prints money that is absolutely worthless because it's not based on gold anymore.
What strikes me about what you're saying is that it locks people into a ceiling. It's not like you can go and, you know, do well, be an entrepreneur, make money, buy a mansion and get out of this grid. Not everybody, but certainly a great number of people and probably a growing number after all of these episodes happen will have no means to start over, create something.
Right.
And
right.
We're also seeing that the wages have dropped and the, you know, everything happening with being part of the working class and working for somebody, there's a ceiling on how much you're making. And they're putting a grid on everything. If you're even in the service industry, you can't even make a tip without that being counted. So I don't see this as making everybody wealthy, independent, happy. It's very gray to me.
Right. It absolutely is. Now, one of the things that goes in with this is the data sharing roadmap that is called Improving Student Outcomes Through Partnerships Between Public Housing Agencies and School Districts. Now, this is a document that was put out in 2017, Dr. Elena, but it's still being used as the Holy Grail, so to speak. And I'm going to read you just a small portion. Nearly 4 million children live in U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development assisted housing. The data sharing roadmap will provide guidance on how public housing agencies can collaborate with school districts and other partners to identify data-driven strategies for strengthening the educational outcomes of students who live in these units. It goes on to tell you that the data sharing partnership, oh Lord, think about that new charter where all the data is just going to go everywhere. And the way I can tell you is if your particular school district is using what's called EMIS or Education Management Info Systems, that goes straight to the World Bank. It doesn't just stay in your school district like you're told. It absolutely doesn't. It goes up the pike and out over to the World Bank. The World Bank also operates and collects what's known as SABER, which is Systems Approach for Better Education Results. So if your school is using either of those, if your school district is using either of those will also go into what HUD calls as a catch area. And what a catch area means is that if you live in a certain geographical distance from a school, you're in that catch zone. So anything that HUD puts out, anything that the school district puts out, puts you in that catch zone, which puts you in eligibility for whatever's going on, whether you use it or whether you don't. Okay. Now, with that, here is what the data sharing partnerships can give as far as better outcomes. It will generate actionable data that leads to improved school performances by the children based on the data showing high rates of chronic absenteeism among students. All right. It goes on to tell you that by using interventions that the government comes up with, it will improve school attendance and able to track where they go. It goes on to tell you that based on data showing that elementary school students at public housing developments are struggling in math, a partner hooked in between education and the housing implemented changes in after-school programs to emphasize math proficiency. Because after all, these partnerships are already working to improve the educational outcomes for students. And this will help the local school district and other sources of school performance data to gain access to tailor these lives.
So this is a planned education system, like it's a planned economy. And if you don't want to do math and you're an artist at heart, what happens to those children who fall outside the planned grid? You don't want to do math. You don't want to be an engineer. You want to do something else. What happens with those children? Is there anything that you can decipher from how they would be controlled?
9 times out of 10, what will happen to them, Dr. Elena, is they will go and meet with a counselor, and the counselor will give them some sort of talk and assessment. Oh, well, you know, that's okay. If you don't want to do this, let's come over here and let's look at this. And I've seen this happen for quite a while, because they are in a prime position to say, okay, well, this career track's not good for you. Well, okay, here's this career track. It doesn't have as much math, but you still have to jump through all the hoops. But did you notice in what I was reading to you how many times the word outcome was used for children? Mm-hmm. So I just don't lose that, okay? Mm-hmm. Don't lose that. Now, that is one way of doing it. The other way is raising the poverty level. And one of the questions that you asked me was why, you know, poverty levels are being raised. Well, first of all, is to connect you to a data system. Second of all, is to target your low income, as you were saying, the lowest common denominator, because some group is going to land in that lowest common denominator. And that's who the program will, that's where the initiative says, oh, well, we're going to go in and we're going to look at this particular group. What they're not telling you is that particular group is going to be where they start. It's not where they stop, because when they stop, you'll be included as well. So don't just think, oh, well, I don't fit that mold, so it doesn't have anything to do with me. I've had this happen to me in places where I've gone to speak, where people are sitting there, oh, well, what you're talking about doesn't apply to me because I don't A, B, C, and D. Mm-hmm. And then I try to explain to them, well, okay, right now it doesn't, but what are you going to do when it does? Are you going to be so ill-prepared that when they come knocking on your door for your child that you're just going to sit there and go, duh? No, you should know. Fourth Amendment. They cannot come into your home without a search warrant or a reason for that search warrant. You do not have to let those people in. I don't care who they say they're from. You don't have to do it. But you don't know that if you're not prepared. So why is the poverty level being messed with? Well, here in January 2024, it was risen to $15,060 a year. That was up from 2023, where it was $13,000 and some odd. Now, the reason why is because the feds use it to calculate their services for customers, as well as streamline data for information, and the census plays right into this. So not only do we have education with their assessment tracking and your healthcare system with its tracking, we now have the census that comes in and is being nosy in your business. All these systems feed the feds to be able to somehow supposedly customize and create better services through their agencies to help we the people. Well, look at how many of those agencies are unconstitutional, and look at how many of these systems are absolutely criminal in the amount of data that they take.
I think you can also say that, do they really help anybody? You know, we're seeing, let's say, education system, the depression rate and children needing mental health services. I would question, is it gone up over the last several years?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm not prepared to answer it. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. But I throw it out there as a rhetorical question. So right. There's really the basis of this is, if you don't control your own destiny, your own pocketbook, and your choices, then what's the point of being an adult and living and enjoying your life? You know, so let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor, and you can go to her website, commoncorediva.com. And you're still doing your own podcast, are you not?
I've had to pause that because the particular group that I was working with I had to go back and get some training and get a new platform and that sort of thing. So that will be up as soon as possible. But I am still working with the morning show on Sons of Liberty as far as appearing. I'm also on your show and then other shows as well.
Well, people need to, they can find where you are going to your website, right? Excellent. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're having a sober conversation because the more you think about extrapolating what could happen, it's chilling. And ultimately, like you said, it's like mission creep. You raise the poverty level. Where does it end? Is it 30,000 next? Is it 40,000? Is it 50? Where does it end that everybody, except for the super wealthy, become part of this whole?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. It absolutely is. Well, if folks want to look at the poverty levels, you can go to hhs.gov, and there's a table there, and they will use this as a floor plan, so to speak, for every state. Now, every state is going to be different as far as their poverty level, and it also varies by your household number. This is where the census comes in. This is where you can connect it back to the census.
It's amazing how it's like this grid. It's little pieces of this puzzle that it seems really innocuous when it's one by one. But when you think about how they are all tied together, then it does change the how you calculate how this would play out. So, right. I mean, as we go, I mean, our education, as we spoke about before, is quite different than the children now. What kind of, I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask it. what kind of adults are these children going to be? They are just controlled and coddled and put in a box from cradle to the time they leave school. What kind of adults are they going to be? Are they just going to be compliant?
I think they're going to be mindless, compliant idiots. And that's as nice as I can put it. And the reason why I say that was because Constitution Day was on September the 17th. And I volunteered to go into a middle school and lead the students in learning about the Constitution. I was amazed, not so much that the students didn't know as much as I thought they might. I was more amazed at the adults who were sitting there going, I didn't know that. And that was in and amongst itself. But what really got me, Dr. Elena, was one of the groups of children that I was speaking to. I saw there were some who weren't really paying attention, but I kept going because I wasn't going to let them have the power to disrupt what I was doing. So I'm carrying on because I know that the vast majority is listening. So I'm not going to hyper-focus on those who, you know, were doing whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, by the time I was done, the adults came up and they decided to say, okay, you were being disrespectful, not pointing to the particular people that they were speaking to. They blanketed that to the entire group. One adult started dressing them down, and before they even started, I said, look, I'm fine. I'm not offended. It's all good. I understand. I've been in their shoes before. It's okay. That wasn't good enough. So the one adult started in on all the children. Then here comes a second adult. Then here comes a third adult, and finally a fourth. And by the time each one of these adults was done, Dr. Elena, I wanted to just crawl in a hole and die, because these children, instead of being able to take away or have fresh on their minds what I'm trying to impart to them about knowledge, they've just been dressed down four different ways. They've gotten punished for an entire week for something that should never have been that way. So what are they really going to glean from that exercise? And that was just one day, less than 2 hours. I cannot imagine what type of leaders we are training in treating them this way. You're going to sit there and blanket the whole class as disrespectful and take away their PE time, what they're now calling brain breaks, because I even had to ask, well, what's a brain break? Well, that's when, you know, we give them time out of their seat. So they just get to sit in their seat more for a week over something that I was okay with.
Wow. I mean, brain break, huh? That sounds really authoritarian. It's like going to jail. It's like prison school between being checked and having the lockdowns. I can't even imagine. That is not an environment, really, where it fosters freedom, freedom of thought, freedom of speech, freedom to make a mistake, right. Freedom to be right. A kid. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, you know, the only reason I was okay with it was because I know I've led students before where it looked, for all practical purposes, it looked like, oh, well, they're not getting what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Until they can sit there and tell you, okay, blah, 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 in perfect response to what you were bringing up. Kids or children don't always look like they're learning or listening, but they are. It's what are we saying? And now that you bring it up, that sounds like prison. The way that the brain break was described to me was, well, they sit in their seats for so long and they're stuck in front of those computers so long. A brain break means that they can go outside and shoot basketball hoops, or they can, you know, run around, or that's why I said PE. They can get some physical activity. We called that recess, and we had more than one a day. We had two or three a day because, you know, and we didn't have computers back then. But trust me, it wasn't near what I saw.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, you're talking about public school, but what about homeschooling? I noticed there's a trend towards people, an increased number of parents homeschooling their children. Does that data tracking, if let's say you're not on a computer, you're not using the standard text and the curricula, are you free from this?
No, you absolutely aren't, because homeschoolers love things that are free. And what better way to get a free education than to go to dual enrollment, where you take your high school and your college classes all at the same time? Okay. Homeschoolers also use, depending on what state they are, they have to use the nationally normed assessments, which means those are data tracked. They're also Common Core aligned. Homeschoolers love things called STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. That is given to us by the United Nations, no doubt. And it is a way to incorporate the Sustainable Development Goals so that it feels like it's happening from within America as opposed to being foisted upon us. Now, I'm not picking on homeschoolers because, trust me, for 23 years, I was one. These were the very people I was trying to reach to say, look, this stuff is coming for you. Let's get prepared. Let's have our students know what to look for. Let's let mom and dad know what to look for so that when these things are dangled in front of you, you don't just take them. You say, no, I'm not going to do it. But the reason why homeschoolers are getting tracked is because we're using virtual school. The supposed rise in homeschool has to do with COVID. And you go and look at the number of families who are using computer-based programs that they didn't create. This is also filled with algorithms. So it's like, you know, at what point do you want to just go ahead and have your child just be a minion for the government? And as far as the data privacy, things are written into each of these things that I'm talking about that goes off of biometrics. It goes off of, you know, how fast your heart is beating or your eyes are blinking or your hands are sweaty, you know, those sorts of things. And that may not sound like a whole lot, but remember, the goal is to turn us into cyber beings, not remain human beings. So if I'm monitoring your heart rate and I'm monitoring your breathing and your eye movement and all this, then I can monitor your brain activity. And if I can monitor your brain activity, Dr. Elena, oh, I can make the test hard or I can make it easy.
Well, you know, there's no joy in this. There's no pursuit of knowledge with this. And that's the whole point of being educated. Critical thinking, being able to have a skill and apply it as you get older, as you learn, and being able to be facile. It doesn't sound like this is what the education system is being created to be. It's part of a pipeline so that you won't ask questions, you won't complain, you'll just live in your government-based whatever and like it. On that note, time goes way too fast, but Lynn, I want to make sure people know how to read what you write and listen to your interviews on other platforms.
Okay. CommonCoreDiva.com. My webmaster is very, very good at putting all the latest interviews out. I'm not writing near as much anymore. I'm having a bout with osteoarthritis, sadly. So when I do write, things will be published. And if you want, you can sign up to get those when they first come out. You also can hit the donate button. I have a place where you can donate to offset all the time and energy that I do put in to researching to be able to do interviews like that. You also can get a school choice info kit that is complete with all the things that you need to have to be able to have a good hearty discussion on why school choice is a huge red flag as far as losing your freedom as opposed to gaining your freedom.
Lynn, thank you for everything that you do. I mean, you just are a wealth of information as usual. And again, it's a call to action for parents to stop sitting back and to take their power back, because no one cares more about your child than you do. And if you expect the government to take care of you, or anybody for that matter, I think you'll be sorely disappointed. So, Lynn, I want to thank you so much for joining me. I can't wait to have you back on.
Well, thank you, Dr. Elena. And you know what? Let's get that scheduled, because I know there is so much more we can share with your audience.
I look forward to it. Thank you for joining me, and thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk Events.